Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. It is Monday night. We are recording this right after a 108-104 loss for the Suns to the Grizzlies. A momentous occasion, Kevin Zimmerman, because the Suns played basketball for the first time in a week. Hello.
Hi. It was a long time. It just felt like that was another bubble-like break before the season began. But yeah, and I guess it had buildup just because of the whole DeAndre Ayton going into that unknown break at the time, struggling. And then obviously we start out here and they're force feeding him and all that.
We're going to get to the game. I'm going to get to at least my thoughts on it, which is, like, it's been a really fascinating season from him. I think the discussion around him is much more complex and has more nuance to it than the last two seasons. But we will start with the reason why that was the first game in a week. We spent a lot of time on COVID and coronavirus last week and just where there were mix-ups and such. I believe, did we record that, Kevin, after my story when we had, like, the breakdown fully of the Wizards COVID trend? I think we recorded that Tuesday, and that was actually Wednesday.
It was after we knew that, like, the Wizards had positives and we felt – like
it was Tuesday.
Big break was coming. Yeah. I think it was Tuesday. Yeah.
So it was Tuesday. We were kind of alluding to it. I ended the podcast by saying we're going to have four games to talk about probably, but I also said, like, things are probably going to be much more different. And that was kind of what I was trying to get at essentially, which was me and you both kind of thought there was a slim chance they were going to play on Wednesday. We did the even more homework with Wednesday's game being canceled. I went back and looked at the Wizards' trail of COVID, and it was very concerning in terms of, like, the likelihood of them playing on even Friday or Saturday. They did not play on Friday or Saturday. And then we come into today's game, Kevin, and we look at Memphis. Memphis played the Timberwolves on Wednesday. Ricky Rubio, Juancho Hernangómez, and Karl Anthony Towns all played in that game. All three of them are now in health and safety protocols after Friday's game between the Timberwolves and Grizzlies was canceled. They were supposed to play two games in 3 days. Second game got called off. Memphis goes on to play on Saturday against the 76ers. Jonas Valanciunas plays in that game, and then he is added to the health and safety protocols list on Sunday. And then Woj confirms that Memphis's game on Sunday, which was going to be against the Oklahoma City Thunder, was postponed 90 minutes before tip-off because of ongoing contact tracing from the 76ers game. So it wasn't exactly like the Wizards in terms of the number of players out and, like, the clear trend towards an outbreak, but it was another one where it didn't look like we were heading in a good direction to play. And what I wrote was, it seems like a wise move for the Suns to just not play Monday, because you start now, the canceled games or postponed games rather really start to add up. Once you get to about three or four, this week break that you have for the All-Star, what they're calling the All-Star break, it's only 6 days. So once you get to three or four games, you're running out of room now on the league calendar to reschedule these games. So the concern obviously is that these games start to add up. But the problem is, if you play on Monday and then you have to cancel Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, like you had to exactly on this same schedule the week before, now you have six games postponed as opposed to four. And that's kind of the decision that had to be made. But I'm sure it was less of a decision and more of just following the protocols for what they were. But as we said last time, Kevin, there's really – No, we don't know the protocols ourselves, and it's hard to really interpret what the difference was between these instances. But they played they played on Monday. The notable, and we'll see what happens tomorrow on Tuesday. We could be in for another couple of games being gone if Memphis has some more positive tests show up, or if the Suns do. And the Suns, we don't know if they were positive tests or not, but they had Dario Saric and Damian Jones added to the health and safety protocols list. Feels like it's a matter of time for every team to have something like that happen, where they have a couple of players out at the same time, not even just due to injury, due to the protocols. But it's the season isn't up in the air or anything, because it's going to keep going, Kevin, but there's just an unpredictability to the day by day. And whenever you see these red flags from postponements and contact tracing for other teams and stuff, you just get worried that you're going to start developing a trend here, right?
I think it's just a tough place to be for the league, because yeah. I think the contact tracing protocols are overly strict, and that's what's wiping a lot of guys off rosters where they don't have enough guys to play. But also it's like, okay, if we just take a few days off to make sure we don't spread it, then we won't cause any more damage to any other team. So it's kind of just this balancing act. And, you know, I think college basketball, which has been going on in a rough type of way, is just going to manage through it. And I think the NBA has to do that too, if they want to finish the season. I think it's going to come down to like guys being disciplined about it. That sounds really simplistic to say, but I think once a team gets hit and they realize, oh crap, this is jeopardizing games that we need to find a rhythm and learn ourselves and learn the team. I think that'll matter a little bit, and I think they're going to get through it now. I don't think they're going to reschedule. It's tough to even look and say, okay, the three games the Suns missed are all going to be rescheduled. Even if you tack on a week at the end of the season, maybe something like that, you get a couple more games in, but I think it's just going to be, we are looking at records at the end of the day. We're going to have more play-in ability, kind of like last bubble season, where they're going to give benefit of the doubt to some teams that maybe are in the race to make it. But yeah, that's kind of the expectation. And I don't know that it's wrong or whatever. That's a question or whatever, but I just think that this is unavoidable as it is right now. And, you know, like if we get to a few months down the road and it's the regular population's getting vaccinated, then you can kind of warp speed this and you'll be in decent shape. But, you know, I don't even want to get into that, how the league's going to do that with all these teams in different places. But I think it's just going to be this way until we get to that point in society, I guess.
That's a really good way of putting it. I think unavoidable is the best word. There are just going to be situations like this, and the crappy part obviously is that this could have been avoided. The Wizards game was one where the trend was so off the charts that you should have postponed the game. And now the Suns had to pay for it by three postponed games, which we'll wait and see how that, if that is a punishment or not, because if it makes them play three games and four games and six nights in a stretch where they don't have that, and it gives them more of those stretches, then they are being punished essentially for it when it wasn't even their fault. And then obviously the part that we can't get into, because we don't know any details on it, we can only assume that Saric and Jones are on the health and safety protocols list because of their involvement in the game on Monday against the Wizards. That could not be the case. We can assume that it is. And if it is, Dario Saric has been one of their three, four best players this year. They missed him tonight in the loss, and they're going to continue to miss him. And to move on from the subject and just give my closing thoughts on it, I just think the thing that some people need to realize, and I myself did not realize that nearly a year into this, there's still a lot of information on COVID-19 that a lot of people don't realize. Jalen Smith does not have a timetable, because if he has coronavirus, or if any of these guys get coronavirus, there is like an average. Sure, there's an average for anything, but we've seen cases for people and athletes, even specifically like the most fit people on the planet, still going through rough stretches. Aaron Baines was out for a month, and like that's when I was getting frustrated myself personally, because I can understand to an extent if some people are just avoiding this because they don't want to see bad news, and then they just aren't staying up to date on it, like because they don't watch the news and for politics and other reasons, but again, we followed the Aaron Baines story in the bubble. Like, he was out for a month, and anyone who watched Aaron Baines and has gotten to know him around the team for the year he spent here, just one of the toughest dudes that's ever played for the organization, period, in its history. And he was in bed for a month with the virus. So I think that's something to understand, is that when this happens for the team, and when you see someone listed on the health and safety protocols for the Suns, we are going to have to treat it like that, which is, it is a TBD on how long they are out, because again, Monty Williams can't say without the player's permission if they have coronavirus, if it's inconclusive testing, if it's contact tracing or whatever. So I just wanted to emphasize that before we hopefully stop with opening the podcast about COVID, but just to say that Dario could be out for 6 weeks. Like, we do not know. I'd have to look and see who's been out the longest so far with it, but we saw how Michael Porter Jr. and Jason Tatum have both been sidelined by it for quite a while already.
Yeah, and I'll just say, I mean, in NCAA, they're testing for heart issues after guys get it, because they don't know the association with there are heart
Suns
issues.
Suns are doing that too, or not the Suns, the league. They make you take a cardiac test before you come back, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez, who's with the Red Sox, got COVID, and he was basically done for the season because they detected some irregularity in his heart. I don't know the medical details, but, and then the other
he
one
developed, that, so he developed a condition essentially. Like, now has a condition that came from COVID. He's I believe he was 29 or 30.
Is I mean, that knocked Channing Frye out for a season. Like, it wasn't, I don't know if it was the exact same thing, but it was a heart related issue that could have been from a virus. And then the other thing was Keontae Johnson, from Florida, college basketball player. He was actually, I think you would know this better than me, pretty high recruit. And he just passed out on a basketball court, walking out of a timeout, hit his head, was hospitalized, like a serious, like they were worried about him for a long time. So, and he had COVID before, so they don't know if that's related, but there's concern there that it is related. And that's why you, as rare as it is, you have to go through these things. So, I mean, I don't know what Jalen Smith's going through, but that's why we don't know, because these people are taking every precaution not to put someone in a bad situation.
Yeah, and we are fully, you hit it there, we are fully supporting that. Like, if Jalen Smith needs a couple more weeks for that reason, if he needs the entire season, that's what he should be doing. Because this thing is serious and it's for real. Okay, basketball played, Kevin. There are 48 minutes of it tonight. The Suns lost 108-104 to the Grizzlies. There were a lot of takeaways from this one singular game. The way that I presented in my recap are like three sort of either things trending. It was only one game, but to see DeAndre Ayton's aggression become a trend would be very welcome, to say the least. He had 18 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, a block, 7 of 14 shooting. We'll get to him in a second, but those three trends, DeAndre, the one trend that is going on right now is that the Suns are losing bad games. They've lost 3 of their last 4, and all 3 were bad losses. The overtime loss to Detroit, where they couldn't do anything on offense, and it got to the point where they even had overtime to figure it out in time, and they didn't. They scored something like 48 points in the last 35 minutes of the game. Wizards blowout again, like they just got, that was just one of those games where you just flush it, but also the offense didn't look good there. And then tonight, another very winnable game that they could have stole late as well, and Devin Booker looked like he was nearly on his way to stealing it. Didn't go well again. Offense was the issue. And then the third trend is just their season as a whole is being defined right now by the fact that they are 7-5 when they should be 10-2, 9-3, 11-1, whatever you want to say, because their strength as a team was supposed to be offense. And now, like, teams' identities can change and stuff, but Chris Paul has not played at the level that he needs to. Devin Booker has not played the level he needs to. And if just one of those guys would, I think they'd have 10 or 11 wins right now. They only have 7. And that's the sort of thing that we're going to remember when we get around the end of the season, and maybe they're in the 7 or 8 spot instead of the 5 or 6 spot. We are very far away from that, but these are the stretches that you remember. You remember last year when we were looking at the bubble, they're 8-0. You just remember that terrible loss at home to the Pistons. They had a couple absolute no-shows at home against Memphis last year. Those are the types of things to remember. So three trends there. Where do you want to start out of those three?
Ooh, want to start with DA?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
This is the part I was teasing where I was talking about nuance to the conversation, because there's a lot going on here. This is not just on him, and I think that's the best place to start, because Kevin, when teams have been throwing multiple defenses the Suns' way, they struggle with it a bit. Switching in particular is something that has bothered them. Monty, I didn't ask him specifically, but I figured when he said we finally figured out their switching, when he says finally, that means we struggled with it for quite a while. A lot of that had to do with getting DeAndre the ball, situations where they were forcing it to him on the mismatch off the switching. It's just the flow of the offense, even when DeAndre is not playing well, it's either forcing him the ball too much, he's not getting it when he should. There's no balance to getting him the ball right now either. Is that kind of the place to start?
Yeah. I think it's pretty obvious. It's a philosophical thing with Monty and the team basically. And okay, you can attack his development one of two ways, I think, at this point. I think you can say, all right, you're a big man. You can go get your 15 points on offensive rebounds, off rim rolls, off, you know, general big man energy stuff, right? Like Rashawn Holmes stuff. Or you can say, we still think you're worth the number one pick, and you're more talented than that. And we know you have, I don't know if you want to say it's confidence issues or whatever, but you can say, okay, we're going to force feed it to you and we're going to make you figure it out and give you the opportunity to figure it out. And I think they're doing the latter. And I think they can right now, because they should be playing well enough to win. Like if Book doesn't go 5-for-21 against the Grizzlies, I don't think the Grizzlies' loss was necessarily terrible in the grand scheme of things. I thought they're all right. I thought they should have won. But I think that they're really trying to get the most out of DA and to show him that he can be that dominant presence. And to me, the thing about tonight's game was just watching them force feed him, but it's like they second guess it to me, like especially Book and Chris Paul. They're not confident that he will catch it or he will do something good with it. Unless it's an obvious lob, they're not giving it to him, or they'll think about it and then eventually do it and then turn it over, because they're telegraphing and struggling to get the timing right. And to me, I think just throw him the ball in a way he can catch it. And from there, it's on him. And he has to figure it out. And if you want to do this where you're force feeding him the ball like that, do that. Let him see two defenders in front of him and figure it out, whether he's dribbling, passing, trying to dunk on him. And that's how he's going to grow. And I think people aren't giving him enough credit for trying, and people aren't like putting the spotlight on Book and Chris Paul for just throwing it into someone else's arms. Cause that's a lot of these turnovers to me.
I think you're spot on, bud. I think that there was a lot of discourse on him over the week, especially on Tuesday and Wednesday, kind of leading up to the game, and then the game not happening, and then the conversations continuing on him. James Jones joined Burns and Gambo, said it was an uneven start to the season for him. I think one of the worst takes that came out of it was that the Suns aren't trying to develop him as much as they were before. I think it's what you're saying. It's the opposite. They are willing to continue developing him as much as they should, in spite of the fact that it might be a bumpy road getting there. And this is where I talk about nuance and part of the conversations we've had about him the past 2 weeks, where I say that and it sounds like I'm saying that it's because of the way that he's playing. It's actually not what I'm saying. Again, to reiterate the last 2 weeks, it is hindering the flow of the offense at times in order to do it, because I think Chris and Devin on their own are already trying to figure out things enough. I think if there was less of an emphasis to get DeAndre the ball, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, like normal, I think Chris and Devin would still be struggling a bit. I don't think it has completely to do with doing it, but I think it is the overload. It is where there's just too much there going wrong. You look at the issues like kind of compounding, you look at it like kind of like filling up a glass, and the thing just overfills when you put in the huge part of it that is making DeAndre the focal point of the offense, which he borderline is right now. I would especially say with how much Chris is trying to get him involved that I think that he is right now. And gosh, the crazy thing about Monday's game to me, Kevin, I don't know if you felt this way too, but I honestly didn't think he played amazing. I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was great even, but was it one of his 5 or 10 best games of his son's career? I don't really think so, but the peak of his aggression reached a point that we haven't seen before over a handful of plays. I think the chicken wing move on Tillman baseline and then the reverse throwdown on the baseline, that was like the move, obviously, but there was the roll to the rim late where Chris Paul found him, and it was a two-handed finish. There was the video I uploaded where he caught it from 18 feet out off his own miss, dribbled that in, and drew a foul. There were just a handful of plays, and then the usual offensive rebounding stuff where it was at such a high level. And when they were giving him the ball in the post against Tillman, I thought he was settling for his jumper too much. I really wanted to see him just get into Tillman like he did on that baseline catch. I thought he was just two dribbles, step back, fade away, or the fall away leaner he likes on the baseline. It's just when a dude is that small like Tillman, you'd like to see him really be the bully there. So I thought it was kind of mixed, but my whole point on that is that it was a great game overall, because even with some of the errors in his play, being that aggressive is going to make up for so much of that. And I think kind of what we've seen with, to bring up an example currently in the NBA, like Montrezl Harrell, at what point are his pick and roll deficiencies not worth him being on the floor anymore? The Clippers didn't care when he wasn't being attacked every possession because he was just such a huge part of their game offensively in the two-man game with Lou Williams. But when teams started attacking him every single possession, that sort of neutralized the overall pros and cons, plus minus of him being on the floor, negative, positive impact. I think that the positives are so high from those little just bits of aggression where he earns them extra points that it makes up for so much. And that's what's so exciting to me. That's what I wrote. It's like, yeah, everyone wants to see him get a 30-30, a 30-20 game, whatever, but those games excite me more when that would have been a pretty meh game for him and more in line with what we've seen all season if he wouldn't have just been like a hair on fire kind of guy for some of those possessions. It was great to see from him.
I think just general effort, and even though he had, especially in that first quarter, a lot of struggles just trying to figure out what the force feeding was about, I think his effort on defense, on running back and getting post position was all good. And to me, I just think it's a lot broader. As you say, it's more nuanced than just blaming it all on him or whatever. Like they're searching for something right now. And I think that's important to point out, because if you remember, maybe going into the last week where they didn't play a game, the issue with the Suns was they were just shooting threes and teams were forcing them to do that. So as a coach, obviously you're going to come out here and say, like, we can't live just as a 3-point shooting team. We don't have slashers. We don't have drivers. So going to DA and making him the focal point is schematically the best counter to what teams were doing to them. And I think it was the second three in the second half where it just felt natural. They found DA in the post. It was a quick touch and he passed it back out, and there was like one more swing and Book was wide open for a three. And that's the kind of stuff where you're like, you don't say that that's DA's like creating that. But when you go back and you look at it, like he's the reason why, and them force feeding him and him doing well to that point generally was the reason why Book got open. So I think it's partially right now just them trying to find their identity on offense, but it is also about his development. And yeah, I honestly, my favorite move tonight from him was the Cam Johnson found him rolling, and there were two guys there, but Cam had an avenue to get it to him easily. And he just had to shoulder through someone and then he dunked it. And that's what I'm talking about, where it's like, don't think about it. If you can get him the ball, just get him the ball and make him figure it out from there. And that's how he's going to get better, I think.
Yeah. And then it goes the other way where they finally got a lob to work. So then Book just forced a lob to him and that Tillman like easily got to. Tillman's got like super long arms too. So that might've been a bit unorthodox for that particular play, but to transition into the inefficiencies for the offense, you look at, if I can kind of like elongate the point here for a second before you grab your pitchforks and stuff, Chris Paul's averaging 13.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 8.5 assists a game and shooting 44% from the field. It's a little bit down, but like statistically that's not bad. And you look at that coming into a Suns game and you haven't watched them all year, you'd be like, oh, okay. He's maybe starting off a little slow, but he's still probably playing like really well. I actually think like the eye test, is worse off there. And the reason I say that is because as someone who, one of my favorite players of the last 15 to 20 years is Chris Paul and the point guard. And I've been continue to be such a huge fan of his game. And the number one reason being that he just controls games, orchestrates tempo in a way that no one else does in the last like 15 to 20 years. Like Tony Parker is probably the closest thing I would say. And that's really been it. I know Nash is in that conversation as well. He's right there for sure. But man, it's just when he's running, I think the high pick and rolls have probably been when it feels like he's the most like in the flow with everything. But he brought it up unprompted tonight. I asked him about Monty saying that they find spurts of effectiveness, but they can't just play their own style the entire game. And then he went on to say, I believe he said, that's most definitely the part for me. He said, like, 6 turnovers, I can't do that, but I've got to get guys the right shots in crunch time. And I think he was just saying overall. And that's something that Monty mentioned when asked about Devin and Chris's chemistry. Is that something with Chris is that sometimes he's just looking to provide for others when he should just be shooting? I think we saw a lot of that in the first 11 games, a little bit less tonight, but still the same thing. And I just think that you can talk about statistics, assists, steals, his defense, like he's still been a net positive for this team. But I think that Chris Paul led teams just reach offensively. The reason why I said like you have like a great offense with Chris Paul every single year is because of that's what he does offensively. But you're just not getting that benefit. And it's not like this small little incentive that he provides. It's massive for him to just be able to control a game, get guys a shot when they need it. I think that's something that I talked about a lot with like guys like Mikal. I was expecting a huge year out of Mikal because Paul was going to be able to get him the ball when he needed it. And it just feels like those types of things aren't really in flow with him. And then I think that in turn, there's such an effort for Chris, deservedly so, being on getting DeAndre the ball that I don't think him and Book have been able to build much together. And Book has not been good. He was the reason that they lost the game tonight. If it was on one player, it was certainly on him. And he could have won the game at the end too. That was the thing. He was 5 of 21, but he hits 2 of those shots that he missed all 3, including that dunk. And then he doesn't leave Grayson. If he doesn't leave Grayson Allen in the corner, they could have won the game. So, he just deserves a super high standard after the way that he played for the first 5 years of his career. He has not lived up to it yet. And this team is only going to get so far until at least one of them gets to that all-star, all-NBA level on some nights, not even the most nights were average from it. There's a 6-step process here to getting them two together, creating an elite offense. And we haven't even gotten through step one yet, I think.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time. I think people are overreacting right now because they love having a scapegoat because it was DeAndre last game, which was a week ago. But like Book's not having the worst season ever. I mean,
no.
He's still pretty efficient. His numbers are down scoring wise by 3 points. His 3-point shooting's like a point down. Like it's one game. Now, if it extends further, and it's true, it doesn't feel like he's super involved. Like his fingerprints aren't all over many games. And that's kind of where you get concerned. And to me, to bring in the Chris Paul angle, because I think it's related, and DA, is it just doesn't feel like the 0.5 offense still. And I think at the very beginning of the season, we're like, okay, well, the bench is doing that. Is that going to be a changeup, or is that going to be more of a, like, a problem for the starters, because the starters just play this very different way because Chris Paul's the point guard. And I'm going to be concerned about that general angle more. And that's not that Chris Paul is necessarily playing that poorly either, but I just think the style is not the same as what Monty was successful at coaching. And they're going to have to either figure it out or get Chris Paul more off the ball, let Devin control it more, and let it flow more naturally, because it's not doing it right now. And I'm sure they're talking about that, what they want to do, what Chris's role is, because I guess if you go back to like Ricky Rubio, he was more ball dominant than you would have thought Ricky Rubio would have been. So maybe that's just extended into Chris Paul being more talented, more skilled. So I just think it's a feel thing that they're going to have to figure out. And ultimately it is, to me, more about Book. And again, I'm not concerned about him right now, and especially after one game, but I think it is more about, like, this is his team. Maybe you prioritize getting him going more than DA, more than Chris Paul, and DA and Chris Paul can kind of fall in the line from there. So yeah, it's a complicated puzzle right now, but I'm sure these are discussions that they have just about how we kind of, what priorities we have, I guess.
Yeah, it's balancing acts. So Rubio and Booker together last year, they averaged 28.9 potential assists per game. Rubio was at 15.8. Booker was at 13.1. Potential assists are what you think they are. You pass it to someone, they miss. If they made it, it would have been an assist. This year, that number for the backcourt combined is at 27.8. So it's only an assist off in terms of the amount of opportunities the backcourt is creating. So it's there, and it's going to go, it should be higher than those two last year because of how much better Paul is as a scorer and how much more he sets up. But the difference is Rubio is at about 15. Paul is at 18.5. And then if you look at Booker, he was, I believe, let me double check right now. He was at 13.1 potential assists last per game last year. He's at 9.3 right now. So there's about five more going Chris Paul's way, and there's about four less going to Devin Booker. And like every other part of the offense is coming together. I think Campaign is a guy that's taking maybe a number or two there, but it's pretty obvious to see where that trade-off is. And like, that's the good news, is that the potential assists between the two are where they need to be. If those numbers were way down for some reason, I think you'd be way more concerned. I agree with you. I'm not concerned about Book. I'm not concerned about Chris Paul. That is a 40 games in question. I mean, maybe like 30 games or 25 games if they go on like a huge run of losing, and it's directly related to those two and not like a run of injuries. Like, there are a lot of qualifiers that I'd have to get to talk about being concerned about their play 25, 30 games into the season. Everyone is burning down after every loss because these types of losses hurt when you're in the hunt for a playoff spot. And they've had three straight of their defeats being in this fashion. So I'm not surprised people are reacting that way. But like you said, no reason to really freak out. I want to say, by the way, that Book, I think, especially in the first half, like one of his best defensive performances, which won't get talked about, him leaving Allen in the corner will get talked about. But I thought that defensively, he is more than playing his part in this system that has made them so good defensively thus far. Are you where are you at in terms of how much this affects the team? Can they still manage to – they've lost three of four. Do you think that this is going to be a season that trends more in the direction of last year, where they are going to have to eventually – from just a wins-loss number standpoint, do you think that, like, I believe they were like 15 and 25 at one point, and that would be quite the drop-off from the start that they had. Do you think they're headed more towards that, or do you think that they're only is trending upward? Are they going to be middling? I think they're going to be somewhere around 500 or above basketball until the offense kind of clicks together, because I think the defense and energy is going to be there. It's not going to go anywhere, but cap ceiling right now is what I think I'll put it at.
Yeah, the good news is I guess if there is good news, there's still a lot of other teams right there with them where you can't really say like, oh, I trust that team's, I'm all in on that. Like even the Warriors are kind of finding themselves, but it's like, man, if Draymond or Steph is out even for a few weeks, that could swing them out of the whole postseason together. So I think they're in a good shape as far as like they have depth, all the things we talked about heading into this year. I think they have leeway to find themselves, if you will, and to really work. Like Monty has made this about process, not just trying to hyperspeed your way into being a championship team. So I think I see that just like tonight's a great example. And that's why we're podcasting right now. I mean, they're trying to get the most out of DA and they're going to slow play it. And I don't know if slow play is the right word, but they're going to find out, like, do we want to give this guy a huge contract? Is this guy a guy we can roll with for the next few years? Or do we just kind of change gears if we decide he's not? Like, that's
it's
something they got to figure out now.
It's short term too, because if you get him rolling in the first 10 weeks of the season, that is going to pay off immensely when you get to the postseason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's short term and long term stuff going here. This isn't just a, I know it's not what you're saying, but this wasn't just James Jones telling Monty Williams, give him the ball 15 times a game. I need to know if he's worth $140 million or whatever the number is.
I mean, that's important, but like the whole point there is even if he's not, then you still are going to ride with him, but maybe you just say, okay, he's going to be number three, number four option. Like they're willing to find out whatever it is right now. And then they're going to go from there, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And to make the conversation not entirely about like Paul and Booker feeding off each other, obviously DeAndre is going to benefit a ton when the offense finds its rhythm too. If they can just find a rhythm for him, let alone the entire offense, then that's going to do a ton for him. I think that's the scoring drop off is a lot of different things, as is most of what we talk about. It's a confluence of factors, but one of them there for sure is that the offense just can't really find its flow specifically when it goes through him, but as a whole. And to wrap up on what you were saying in the West, it's a weird sort of parity run right now, but I think you look at the bottom of the division or the conference, I should say, Rockets 4-7. It doesn't feel like they're, maybe they hit a huge run with Oladipo. I think that they have enough talent to make a run in the West, but right now they're on the inside or on the outside looking in. Sacramento 5-9, they're an absolute tire fire defensively. I think if you want to rule out a team right now, 14 games in, they're one of the first to bring up. And then Minnesota 3-9. That was really rough that when Karl Anthony Towns was out, I believe he was injured for a couple of games. He comes back and then he gets coronavirus. Just brutal turn of events for them as a team. And of course for him personally, with everything that he's had to go through, and wouldn't you know it, Kevin, tied for the 8th seed right now is Oklahoma City at 6-6. Like, I don't, what's going on over there? I watched them like once or twice and it's just like, are they just going to be the new Spurs? Is this them now? Do they just do this?
I'm looking at the standings. They have like the third worst win or point differential somehow.
So yeah.
That's not that much at this point, 12 games in or 13 games in, but
yeah, the weird part, San Antonio is quietly one of those teams with a positive point differential right now. They're 8-6. Memphis or Portland is 8-6. That is despite losing Nurkic and Collins again. Just that's a speaking of a crazy turn of events for a team. Golden State's figuring it out, as you said, 6-6. But then the story really is these three teams. Dallas is down to 6-7. Denver has been down there for a while. They're 6-7. And then New Orleans went on a run of losing 5 straight before winning last night. They're 5-7. So you look at those teams that are on the outside looking into the playoff picture and everyone that's in, there's a lot of shifting that still has to go on. And I think I guess that's probably the good news, I would say, from like a Western Conference outlook. I still think that I don't want to say inexcusable, but they really should be at least 9-3, probably 10-2 with the way these games have gone. But they haven't lost a lot of ground yet in terms of what they did, because they started off, what was it, 5-1? What did that? I don't even remember. 5-2.
Yeah, because I was going to make the joke about the Cardinals also started 5-2 and missed the
playoffs. Don't do that.
Here we go.
That's not necessary. I am very confident that the Suns have a better head coach than the Arizona Cardinals alone. That is. on top of decision making and all those kinds of things. That I think we're
no comment.
We're good to go. So, no, is this the part, Kevin, where we say we'll see how many games they play this week? I guess it is. They are on schedule to play Houston on Wednesday in Houston, and then it is the second iteration of a back-to-back in the same city. That is in Phoenix this time. That is on Friday and Saturday against Denver. If you are a fan who doesn't really pay attention to other teams like league-wide and just are focused on the Suns, Jokic has been one of the 3 to 5 best players in the league right now. He has been outstanding. The problem is their supporting cast right now outside of him, which has always kind of been the story there, but even more so. Turns out that Jeremy Grant just might be an all-star, Kevin. Oops.
Whoops.
Paul Millsap not playing crunch time. Whoops.
What's Michael Porter Jr. doing?
Coronavirus. Just sitting out, not thinking about vaccines at all.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
I had to say it.
Yep.
Reconsider your propositions on that front, Michael. All right. We will be back next week. We always reconsider our propositions on this podcast. We will do so next time. Bye.